This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to For the Pod.
And welcome to a brand new edition of What the Puck. It is a Washington Capitals podcast, which means it's a podcast about your 2018 Stanley Cup champions. Thank you all for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Player.fm, Google Play Music, and Satchel. Well, we have a special episode of What the Puck for you today. We're going to look into the future. You got that crystal ball that Coach Dan's always talking about. We're going to look into the future. We're going to hand out some What the Puckies, and we are going to be joined by Canada's own Ryan Drury. So yeah. There he is. Ryan's already here. He's right there from Canada. And Ryan's here. Coach Dan's here as well.
I'm trying to figure out what crystal ball that I've apparently mentioned before. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you know, you can see the future.
I'm always wrong, though.
I think that's your thing, though. You see the future.
I mean, this is what's going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. I'm like, yeah, told you.
Yeah, you see.
You admit that, though, Dan. You're like our manager.
I'm like, you know what? I made a guess. It was wrong.
Yeah.
More or less what we do.
I played Aubameyang at left back. Whoops.
Hey, golden boot, dude. Shush.
I know. Yeah, he's good.
He's sticking around at least after the season. All right, we need to focus. Brandon's going to get distracted.
Yeah, I'm just going to start playing with my cat. So let's talk about some puck here. The Capitals, unfortunately, just a few
aren't playing any more of it.
Yeah, they are playing in the Worlds. Lars Eller's lighting it up over there in Worlds. But
what was the deal with him taking an extra few days to however long that was to be like, you know what, I think I'll go play too.
I mean, he was like, you know what, I miss hockey. You take a couple of days off, you get out of the grind, and then you're like, you know what?
Couple of appointments?
I've never been to Slovakia before. I want
to
go.
You had to go to a dentist? What's going on? He was like, all right, I guess I'll go join him now.
But
yeah, I don't know. I wasn't, like, isn't his dad involved with the national team, though, in some way? I could be wrong there. I think, like, his dad is involved with the national program in some respect. Maybe he got in his ear and was like, you need to come over. Like, I don't know.
Were they struggling? And they called him up and were like, help.
I think they're at the bottom of group A. I think they're number four right now in group A. So they're above the U.S.
We need someone to save us. He scored a pretty big goal for the Capitals. Maybe he can do the same thing for that. Watch them now win the whole thing.
Well, you know, you never know. Germany is kicking everybody's butt in group A right now. But, Ryan, we didn't get to talk to you last week. Coach Dan and I talked a little bit about where we thought things went wrong with Carolina, and we didn't really bring up TJ Oshie very much. I mean, we talked about Carl Hagelin and a couple of the other struggles, but TJ Oshie, let me ask you, Ryan, what do you think it was losing him? How big of an impact was losing TJ Oshie to this team and you know, exiting out in the first round?
I think it was massive, and it sucked because he is the anchor of the right side. Now, like, I mean, having said that, Tommy Wilson took a big step forward. And I actually remember a couple of years ago when we were having a heated discussion on this show about Tom Wilson. And didn't I tell you guys there was more in that big beefy package of a beauty from Ontario? And he really stepped up. I mean, he scored 22 goals and he missed a ton of time at the start of the year. He ends up missing 16 games. He still pots 22. That's the power forward that I used to watch in the Ontario Hockey League, and he really stepped forward. Having said that, though, TJ Oshie is a big part of the heartbeat and identity of this team. And I mean, you know, I was having a discussion with somebody the other day on our show about how somehow it came up about the Erat trade where we gave up Philip Forsberg. Okay. And I said, yeah, you know, that trade doesn't bother me as much anymore because if we still have Forsberg, we don't have Oshie on this team. And he's a massive reason why we were able to finally win a Stanley Cup. But, you know, having said all that, it's pretty obvious what it did to the team. It sucked losing him. And that was a puke-worthy hit by that Fogle kid who I really like. He's a really good player. That was a joke of a play. And it was absolutely worth a suspension. I don't care what anybody says. You'll never talk me off the ledge there in respect to that hit. He knew exactly what he was doing. He pushed a guy from behind in a vulnerable position from far away from the boards. It makes me sick every single time I see a guy go head first into the end wall like that. It was a joke that that wasn't a suspension, and it clearly affected the Capitals. But beyond that, though, they absolutely still should have won this series. I know you guys broke this down beforehand, but at the end of the day, without getting into too much detail, rehashing, you know, how upset we all were, they just took their foot off the gas way too much. They outplayed Carolina a ton, and they just took their foot off the gas. They were lazy. Too many guys were passengers. It was basically a repeat performance in some respects of playoff failures past, where Ovi and Backstrom were doing everything, and then a bunch of guys just were like, oh, they'll just carry us or whatever. And Ovechkin was unbelievable. That might have been the best first round performance I've ever seen out of him. He was unreal, especially in game seven. That move he made around three Hurricanes to feed Tom Wilson, I thought this game's over, and they completely took their foot off the gas, and I blame the coaching staff for that as well.
Yeah, so after game seven, you were very heated on Twitter talking about the coaching staff, and you wanted them to completely do an overhaul of this coaching staff. Now that you've had a little bit of time to simmer, are you still as angry, or do you think, like, all right, maybe not the entire coaching staff should be let go?
No, I am still as angry. I think the entire staff should be canned. What on earth did that staff do to warrant coming back? They took a Stanley Cup champion team that basically returned the same roster. If anything, they actually improved on it at the trade deadline. I thought Carl Hagelin was an excellent addition, and he fit the role that he was acquired for perfectly. And they took a team that was so dominant and bought in and did all the little things right. This is excluding Todd Reardon, by the way. You can't just like take a head coach and gas him after 1 year. I think that Reardon has some room to grow, and clearly he's a capable guy. Awesome assistant coach. Like, let's not forget, Todd Reardon raised the level of this decor last year, and all it takes is to look back at the quotes that Michael Kempney said about him, John Carlson, Orlov, all those guys said Reardon was a huge reason why we were able to raise our game. However, Reed Cashman and the rest of the guys, what on earth did they do to come back? And I was pissed off when the Capitals announced, no, there's not going to be any changes to the staff. Well, by God, these guys better have this, both units, the power play and the penalty kill, at least top 15. That power play better be top five. It's a joke what happened to our power play with the amount of talent we have on this team. It was ridiculous watching just the same crap over and over again. If Ovechkin didn't score, nobody was taking shots. It's ridiculous what happened to the power play with the weapons that we have available.
Well, what do you think? I have a question going off of that. The power play, I think if I remember my notes correctly from when we recorded last, they were fourth in the regular season in the NHL. But in the playoffs, they were ninth out of 16 teams. What do you think is the reason as for why it went from fourth in the National Hockey League to ninth in the playoffs?
Because they nosedived and didn't change up any of their strategy. Obviously, not having Oshie in that bumper position hurt, but he was there for the first few games. Everybody stands still. And that power play is so good when it's clicking, but you can't just stand there and move the puck around. If you're standing in the same spot, it's very easy to cover you. I mean, it doesn't matter how well you're able to pass the puck. If the defense, even if there's only four of them out there, know that you're just going to be standing there the entire time, it really doesn't matter how nice of a saucer pass you can make, because they know you're standing right there. They basically don't even have to look. And Ovechkin is the only guy that's a weapon out there, especially later on and into the playoffs, because he's the only one who was taking shots that were anywhere near dangerous. I don't know what happened to John Carlson. He was unable to find good shooting lanes. And of course, that's a byproduct of everybody standing still and not doing anything. I mean, the biggest cog in the machine that failed was Kuznetsov, and I'll talk about him later. I love the guy, but my God, he nosedived in the playoffs. It was embarrassing to watch the effort on the power play. That much talent on the ice with that much money in those guys' wallets, that should not have been happening against a goaltender that had a sub 900 save percentage in the series. I don't think people are locking in on that enough. Do you realize that Peter Mrazek had an 898 save percentage in the first round, and we lost to that guy? That's a joke. That should not happen with a team with Kuznetsov, Backstrom, Ovechkin, all the guys. That was embarrassing, and the penalty kill was even worse.
I honestly can't think of a good aspect in the playoffs, at least, of this team. I mean, so many stars throughout the regular season. You've had how many of the guys were 20 goal scorers? It looked like these guys, I don't know if they just got in their head that this was going to be a cakewalk because it was Carolina in the first round. I don't know what happened, but hopefully it's a wake-up call to these guys next year that is not going to just be easy, which, I mean, it's crazy. They got to the top of the mountain a year ago. You think they would realize, oh, it takes a little bit of effort here. Because like you said, Ovi was the only guy skating out there. I completely agree with you. He was the only one trying to do anything. Everybody else was doing the dump and chase. There was that slingshot move that they wouldn't stop doing. And when you get a power play and it's double OT and you only get one shot on net, you're not going to win. I had a horrible feeling heading into game 7. And when they got to that second OT and they couldn't score, I was like, the game's already over. We might as well just give it to Carolina.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can't argue with any of that. Like, you know, this all goes with being said. I mean, with this core, I'm happy forever. Like, they won the Stanley Cup last year. It you know, pinpointed and ended a great chapter finally in my life as a fan. But when we're looking at this year and in respect to this year's playoffs, you can't deem it anything but a failure. And there's no reason why this team couldn't have got, you know, their collective crap together, even without TJ Oshie and Michael Kempney, and done significantly more damage, especially against a team in Carolina that, I mean, I know it's still early in that series in the conference final, but they are getting handled by Boston. And Boston's a team that I think the Capitals are better than. I think the Caps are absolutely top to bottom better than the Boston Bruins. And they are dummying the Hurricanes for fun right now. It'll be interesting to see what happens tonight in game 3 as we record this, but they are dummying them. And the Capitals took their foot off the gas and let Carolina walk all over them.
Now, let's look into the future, and then we'll let Coach Dan kind of take over here, and we'll talk about the immediate future. But looking long term, Coach Dan and I have been having a heated discussion for weeks now. What is going to happen to Ovechkin leading up to the end of his contract, going into thinking of the Olympics coming up? Do you see Ovechkin staying with the NHL if they say he can't play in the Olympics? Because stick around, I say at the end of his contract at 2021, he's going back to Russia. What do you think?
I don't know. I think he's going to stick around, actually. You know what? Because I don't know that he's built in the same sense of a guy like a Pavel Datsyuk, where or an Ilya Kovalchuk, where he has that hunger or desire to go home and play there. Now, I could be wrong, but I mean, he did an awful lot in helping revive the Dynamo Junior program when he was over there, because, you know, in the decade prior to him coming through the program with a lot of other talented players, a majority of them in the KHL now, that program was struggling. Like, they were not very good. So I don't know that he necessarily has that desire to go home and prove anything, because he's a guy that has like a long-term legacy outlook. And that's why he always said the Stanley Cup was the most important thing to him. And now that he finally has that, now, you know, of course, the conversation ramps up around the Gretzky goals record. I think he actually might be interested in taking a run at that. Hmm. I don't know if he'll be able to do it. It's such an insane amount of goals. For the record, I already think he's the greatest goal scorer of all time. But, you know, as long as Gretzky has the record, people will argue that, and for good reason. I don't think that he's necessarily going to go home. I think that he has a real attachment to the Capitals organization. I think he's got a real attachment and a great relationship with Ted Leonsis. And I don't know. Like, there's nothing for him to prove at home. Like,
well,
I think he
wants that gold medal for the Olympics. That's I'm not saying he'd go play for the KHL long term.
I don't know. Like, yeah, the gold medal would be nice. And you know what? I think he's going to get an opportunity, whether he stays in the NHL or not, to do it, because there's no way that the NHL is going to not have their players in China. There's absolutely no way.
That's a good point.
It would be a massive massive business windfall if the NHL does not have their players in that country for that tournament, because they've already made, you know, huge inroads in terms of trying to crack that Asian market.
Yeah.
Where when you consider, like, there's 1.3 billion people in that country. That is a massive market that, like, you know, the English Soccer League and the European Soccer Leagues are starting to try, you know, they're the ones that have gotten a hold of that a little bit, where they're finding if you can crack that market and get TV deals down there, that's just millions of dollars of more revenue and customers that are experiencing your product. They're having the preseason games over there and everything. They want to be in China. But the NHL, obviously, I've talked about the IOC and, you know, numerous different platforms. They are a group of corrupt, greedy pigs, and they are. There's no nice way to talk about the IOC, FIFA, whatever you call it. They are greedy pigs, and what they need to do is make some concessions for the NHL players, like covering their health insurance, because I know the Olympics is supposed to be an amateur event, but none of the athletes that compete are amateurs. They dedicate all of their life and time to being good at their sport. There's no such thing as amateur athletics anymore, in terms of the Olympics anyway. Like, none of those guys in the Summer Olympics, the swimmers and everything, they're not amateurs. They're in the pool literally year round getting funded to do that. So I think that he will have an opportunity to go and win that gold medal. And I think that he really has an attachment to being known as a forever great NHL player, because he already technically won a championship over there in the lockout season with Nick Backstrom. He has nothing to prove at home. He's the greatest Russian hockey player of all time, bar none, right up there with, you know, Fedorov, Malkin, all those guys, Tretiak. He is at the pantheon of that no matter what.
I didn't think about the whole China market thing. That is a really good point. The NHL is definitely going to want some of that money. So, Coach Dan,
yeah.
I know that you had a couple things you wanted to bring up just according for like this off season. So why don't you take it here and bring up some of the stuff going on right now in Washington?
Well, I always thought it would be kind of fun if we just went through a couple of predictions that we think we may have for this upcoming offseason in terms of what the Capitals will do. And if you want to go in depth in terms of, I think they'll select this specific player, be it in the draft, or they'll trade for this guy, like, that's fine. I'm not going into that much detail in terms of players from other teams. But I have a couple of thoughts and things I'd somewhat like to see them do, or my predictions for the offseason. And the first one, I think, is that we're going to see a big trade with the Capitals. And I think they have to. They don't really have the cap space to be able to re-sign a lot of their guys and then be able to go out and, you know, acquire the guys that they need to be able to improve off last year's team. And so I know it's been talked about a lot in the media, so it's not necessarily an original idea, but I think Matt Niskanen has played his last game as a Washington Capital, and he's potentially on his way out. And I wouldn't be surprised if they acquire from him a bottom six forward and a draft pick. I think that might be more of a salary dump than an actual attempt to improve the roster through the trade of Matt Niskanen, unless you are able to send him out and actually convince another team to send you a top six or top nine forward. And I think if it's not Niskanen, my guess is Orlov is on his way out. And I only say that because of his cap hit. Thoughts?
I agree. And when I built my kind of cap friendly roster for the Caps for next year, I traded Matt Niskanen away. Obviously, Orlov would probably be a more attractive piece for teams simply because of his age and his skating ability. Whereas Matt Niskanen's a bit of an older guy. You know what you're getting with him. It's meat and potatoes hockey, good veteran guy, had a tough year. He's still a very useful player, and he's a right-handed shot, which a lot of teams really, really covet. They have trouble getting high-end right-handed shots. Now, you're not going to get, you know, insane offensive production out of him, but you know exactly what you're getting with Matt Niskanen. Whereas Orlov is one of those guys where you never know what you're going to get with him. And last year, thankfully, in the playoffs, he skyrocketed to a level that I just don't know that we're ever going to see him play at again. He's so erratic, but he is very skilled. And he would probably be a potentially more attractive option simply because of his age and his cap hit of just 5.1.
I would like to see Matt Niskanen stay. I'd rather see Dmitry Orlov leave because, like you said, you don't know what you get
you
with him.
Hate Orlov.
I don't like him. I will be honest. I don't like Orlov. I mean,
I get it.
He's got good games. He's got bad games. He's played games where he's looked like he didn't want to be there, and he's played games where he looks like he's having a great time. He's done dumb stuff on the ice. He was the defenseman that was in there in Game 7, double OT, let that puck kind of get in the way and get deflected to Holpe. He was the guy on the ice. So Dmitry, yes, he's got a couple lesser years on him than Matt Niskanen. I could definitely see one of them going, but another name I think probably is not going to be a Capital next year is Brett Connolly. He was one of those 20 goal score guys. What was his cap hit? It was only like $1.5 million, something like that. You send him to a team like Calgary or Dallas, maybe Vegas, something like that. He's going to get top 6 minutes and he's going to get top 6 money, and the Caps can't afford him anymore. I think it's one of those, you know, Matt Hendricks, Jay Beagle type of things where you got the best years out of him, but he kind of priced himself out of the play.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know how you get Brett Connolly back on this roster. Even if you move out an Orlov or an Niskanen, you know, that's going to leave a hole on your defense, just in the sense that you're going to have to squeeze a lot more minutes out of a younger guy. Now, I think that Jonas Siegenthaler is ready to play full-time NHL minutes. I actually thought that he was one of the bright spots in the playoffs there, and I thought he filled in pretty well in the last two games when they paired him with Carlson and finally smartly put Carlson back on his right-hand side. So you're probably going to, you know, trade that guy and get, like Dan said, a lower roster place forward and a pick probably for, obviously Orlov would command a higher pick. So you're going to have to squeeze somebody in there. But then even still, when you do that and you move that salary out, I just don't know where Brett Connolly fits here, because we have to have a next year outlook as well with, you know, Braden Holtby and Nick Backstrom's contracts expiring. They're both going to command raises probably. So you have to have that outlook as well. I just don't know where Connolly fits in here. He's probably going to land himself a $3.5 to $4 million, maybe even $4 or $5 million annual salary, and he deserves it. And I don't think that Washington can do that.
That's a lot of money for Connolly. And the thing is, I agree. If he goes up, 3.5 is hot. Someone will pay it. 3.5 is high. If he can go out and get 3.5, or he's demanding that, see ya. The problem is, how do you replace him? Because Caps don't really have anyone in the minors or even on their fourth line where you go, all right, this guy can slide into that spot. And on top of that, it goes to my next kind of prediction, and this kind of all goes together, is that I don't think Andrei Burakovsky is getting a qualifying offer.
No, I don't think so either. But before you jump on to Andre, I do want to bring up something you said, Dan, is that you're thinking Niskanen's out and you'll get somebody a lower end and draft picks. They need those draft picks. They need them badly, because I believe there's only 12 guys actively on the Hershey Bears roster right now. So they have a lot of guys that are young. They're leaving town. They could get some extra money, some new contracts. But right now, as we're talking, there's only 12 guys that are signed to that team, so they need those extra picks.
See, Connolly, though, losing him makes me a little nervous, because like we say, he's a 20-goal scorer. He's only 27 years old. Yeah, he's going to be a little bit more expensive, but if you let him go, who's going to replace that production, that given he didn't give you much in the playoffs, but who's going to replace that production in the regular season of those 20 goals? You don't have any offensive-minded prospects that are ready to make that step up currently playing in Hershey or anywhere else. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. You know, maybe look at a guy like Riley Barber, but it sounds like he's not coming back.
Yeah, he's already said he doesn't want to come
Nathan
back.
It's not Nathan Walker, Brandon. So I don't know specifically, like, who's going to replace that? You're going to have to go with somebody from the outside, and is that going to cost you just as much? I think if you go after Connolly now, maybe you can get him at a 3 or under, but it's going to be tough based on his past season. And I'd be curious to see what other guys of that sort of same skill set or the same numbers from this past season, what they're going to get in this offseason. And that could sort of, you know, maybe Connolly wants to see what the market bears before he decides to re-sign or sign somewhere else.
If he wants more money, he's going to get it out of here. I mean, it's That's just the way it is.
Well, he still can't get it here, but if you're the Capitals, how are you going to replace 20 goals or whatever the total number was that he got? Was it 22?
I think it was 20? He got 22, I believe. And yeah, you're right. That's going to be the challenge. Like, yeah, the Caps could make it work and get him to stay. I mean, if you're going to, you know, gun to my head, make me pick between Burakovsky, who he would be the guy that the Caps would be going, okay, this is the year where you got to step up and be a consistent top six forward and replace that. But I'm sick of the guy. Like, I know Alan May still loves him and wants to hold on.
He's only 3 years younger than Connolly. He's making twice as much.
I know. I don't need to get into how I feel about Andre Burakovsky again on this show. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of, you know, like there are little flashes, like always, where he, you know, makes nice things happen. He did it again in game 7. But for every one of those, there's 50 instances throughout any given week of the season where I'm like, what the hell was that guy doing? What are you doing? So I'm sick of that. And you know what? $3 million. And I mean, he's not going to likely want to take a decrease in pay. I'd actually, try and ship him out, maybe get a decent veteran defenseman. They're going to have to make it like maybe you package him up with Niskanen or Orlov and get a defenseman who's maybe struggling with another organization and swap him for the potential of Burakovsky. And the obvious team that you do that with is the Edmonton Oilers. And a lot of people have pointed that out, obviously, because Burakovsky's history playing on the right side of Connor McDavid in the OHL with the Erie Otters. He would be a cheap option for the Oilers. They're not going to have to pay him $5-something million to come play. And he has shown in the past that he had great chemistry with Connor McDavid, and the Oilers desperately need quick, skilled wingers, which he is. He's just extremely inconsistent. But could he be a guy, like, no disrespect to him, but if Alex Chiasson can score 18-plus goals playing mostly with McDavid, Burakovsky certainly, if he can't score 20-plus with McDavid, he should leave the NHL. But that would be the team that you maybe target and say, hey, you've got a defenseman over there. I don't know who it would be that you could potentially target and say, we'll swap you the young potential here for, you know, defender X. And, you know,
I don't know if I want a defender. I want a forward. I feel like if I'm replacing Burakovsky, because you have all these young defensemen in the system. And if they move on from Niskanen, and my other prediction is I think Orpik's going to retire. And I'd love to see him come back as a coach. But
same. If
he goes and Niskanen goes, Singenthaler, I agree with you. Singenthaler? Do we have a definitive?
Singenthaler.
I think he's going to get a full-time spot. And I think Christian Juice, after having a longer offseason to really recover, I think he comes back, he's going to earn a spot. And so I think you have your top six, right? Yeah. And Carlson, yeah. Orlov, Kempney, Jensen, Singenthaler, and Juice. You have your six, and then maybe you have one of the other young guys kind of pushing them for more minutes as well. I want one of the forwards from Edmonton.
Yeah, I guess the thinking there would
be... And his name is Connor McDavid. No,
I guess the thinking there would be that maybe if Brian McClellan's a little nervous about one of those younger defensemen having to take a big step, you get that guy, and then in moving the salary of both Niskanen / Orlov and say Burakovsky as well, you get the requisite money to pay Brett Connolly to stay. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of options out there, and Edmonton would be a team in Burakovsky's terms that would probably be very interested in him.
I'm trying to find out how much Edmonton has in terms of cap space going into next season.
I just got to say, since you guys are bringing it up, I miss Alex Chiasson. I liked Alex Chiasson. I thought he was a...
I didn't, because his name was too hard for me to say on the show.
He was a gritty guy. And honestly, I think, you know, the relationships off the ice are almost as important, if not more, than on the ice. And
he's unrestricted, Brandon. You can have him back.
He should come back, because him and Ovi seem like they were best buds. Like, at the victory parade, as they're doing all the intros, Ovechkin stood up and hugged a couple guys. Chiasson was one of those guys. So it seems as if, you know, if Ovi enjoys playing and enjoys you as a teammate, Like I'm not going to say he's playing better, but I mean, that's a better environment in the locker room to be a part of. We've seen locker rooms where Ovi's not happy and it's not a winning locker room. So I don't know. I like Chase on a lot. I like what he brought to the table.
Let's look at that for a second. So Chase, I can't say his freaking name. He got 9 goals, 9 assists in 61 games last season with the Capitals. Whereas this past season, Burakovsky at a significant more amount of money, 12 goals, 13 assists, 25 points. So slightly better, but significantly more money. If you're going to replace Burakovsky with Alex Chase, yeah, it's a bit of an odd, you kind of head scratcher in terms of, you know, Burakovsky has essentially or allegedly more potential, but he costs so much money for such a streaky player. It's tough to go into that and really think he can be the guy, you know? And then the question is why is he working at Edmonton and not here? What was the deal with Alex Chase that really made him? Is it the system? And if we're playing a similar system with Reardon, is it a good idea to bring him back? I think it's really finding a guy that has played with this. That's why I just wish they had so many, or at least a couple of offensive or forwards in the minors that were ready to make that step up, that knew the organization or were playing a similar system and were ready to make the jump. They just don't have anybody.
I mean, they've got guys like Shane Gersick, who's all right, but I don't know.
And maybe he is the guy that can come up and make a play. Maybe he's one of the guys, or do you look at, I don't know. I mean, they brought the Jonsson Fjällby back from Sweden. He got reassigned to Hershey, but he's probably not ready to make the step up at this point. And really,
he wasn't even ready for the AHL last year. That's why he went back home.
Well, I don't know if that was it, or if he was just, was it a cultural thing more so than the play of the AHL? Like, if you took all those guys and put them in Sweden, would he have been more comfortable?
I don't know. Have you heard that Hershey is the Sweden of America?
You know, there are similarities.
Nice. Yeah. Well, actually, I think he wanted him on loan. And so the Caps agreed to loan him back to, I believe it was Djurgården that he was playing for in Sweden. And he did pretty well over there. I mean, in limited minutes playing against men. And I'm sure that was a big reason why the Caps were okay with it in the end. They knew he was going to be playing against veteran players, some of whom have played in the NHL before. But yeah, he's not ready to step up. Gersick, he's probably going to get a long look in camp simply because he is so fast. And he was a talented college player. Showed a bit of scoring touch and everything like that. But yeah, there's nobody that's going to step in and have like a Brett Connolly type of impact, at least that I've seen, that's in the system right now. So yeah, if a potential trade happens or the movement of salary to free up a potential free agent signing, you're obviously going to want to be targeting somebody who has a bit of pop. And for me, Burakovsky, he's still got the potential to do that. I just don't think it's going to be here. I've seen enough, and maybe a return to maybe a place like Edmonton. I mean, Dan, you ask, what was it about Chase on that made him, you know, more offensively successful? It's very simple for me. It was Connor McDavid. That's exactly what it was. I jokingly said the other day, I think that I could confidently score 3 or 4 goals in the NHL playing Connor McDavid. I'm not even joking, because not because I'm good, because he's that good. You could put a bum like me on his left wing and I'll literally just skate to the back post and he'll put it in off my thigh.
That counts. That's a goal.
That's a goal. That's a goal. Absolutely. They all count if they go over the
line. Okay, but then that's even more of a reason not to bring him potentially back, because it didn't work. Another reason it worked is because I mean, do you have to put him on the first line? Well, not Kuznetsov, because he didn't show up. But do you have to put him with Kuznetsov or Backstrom to make him work? Because we're looking for guys that can play on the third line or the fourth line, which makes you think he's not – this is completely – I mean, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. So making a trade for him wouldn't make sense. I don't know if we were necessarily talking about that. But I agree that Edmonton might be a place that Burakovsky could work. I don't know what the Caps would want in return. I mean, if you look at, if they're trying to free up salary, potentially, you know, if they wanted to move someone out, those guys are way too expensive. The Caps can't afford to take on salary in the Burakovsky move, especially if you're, I don't think they're really looking for a top six forward at this point.
No, I don't know that they are either.
They're going to have to strengthen up the bottom six. That's before last year, that was the issue in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And again, that same problem kind of reared its ugly head, because the bottom six were pretty much non-existent in the first round against Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. It'll be tough. But I mean, I wonder almost if the move there would be moving Burakovsky there simply to get away from his salary and potentially trying to target somebody in free agency that that could fill that. Because even if you sign somebody in free agency for more than what Burakovsky's making at $3 million, even if you sign a guy for more than that and you move a Niskanen out, and let's just say you move a Niskanen out and you're comfortable just keeping the decor as it is and bumping, obviously, Nick Jensen up into that slot with Orlov, and then you've got young players in guys like Juice and Siegenthaler down at the bottom. If you're comfortable with that as the Capitals, you have a bit more room now in moving a guy like Orlov or Niskanen to pay a free agent a little bit more if you also don't have Burakovsky on the books.
Very good point. Very good point.
Interesting.
It's going to be an interesting summer, boys. Like, there's no doubt about that.
Well, they're definitely, if you move out, if you're saying you move out Niskanen, you move out, and that's a lot of money you've now freed up.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to re-sign Connolly at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then you probably still, with signing Verona, which is, you know,
that's got to be a priority number one.
That's signing up for your future. I think he's the guy. He's the next guy after, you know, Backstrom, Ovi, and that era finally does leave or retire. Verona is the guy you're building around.
Yeah, 1,000,000% right now. And even if you sign him and you move all that salary that we're theoretically talking about out, and you re-sign Connolly to, let's say, 3.8, maybe a high 4, I don't know. Maybe you sign him there. Even if you sign Verona to, let's say, I don't know what, $5.5 million over a 6-7 year deal, you've still got some wiggle room for a year to potentially go after another guy that could help your bottom six. You would still have a little bit of money there.
So I'm looking at cap friendly right now, and I think I've done this correctly in terms of played with like the filters in terms of the upcoming free agents. So I have a couple of filters. Cap hit no more than $3 million based on this past season. Only looking at forwards, the only guy that it looks like had more points than Brett Connolly is Ryan Dzingel.
Yeah, Dzingel. Yeah.
He had 56 points compared to Connolly's 46. After him, you're looking at Michael Ferland in Carolina. Brandon, your boy Jason in Edmonton.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say this guy's name, so I'm going to skip him. Tomas Vanek in Detroit, but he's 35, so he's essentially, in the hockey terms, in a rocker.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with Tomas Vanek on this.
So you got a bunch of the older guys. There are options, but if you're looking, these guys aren't going to be necessarily younger. I think there is a definite connection between Burakovsky and Connolly in terms of you're only bringing one of those guys back.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you're smart, you're bringing back Connolly.
Yeah. I just think it's time to move Burakovsky on. You know, he doesn't have the point. He doesn't have the consistency.
Yep.
He's too much of a Tomas Fleischmann for me.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair comparison. One of the other predictions I have, I think neither Backstrom nor Holtby will be signed to extensions this offseason.
Neither? So
I think neither during the offseason, which means both will be announced tomorrow. As it tends to happen with my luck in this freaking show.
But I think
both get new deals sometime during next season.
I think Backstrom 100% gets a new deal. Holtby scares me a little bit because I love Holtby. I think he's such a fantastic player, but we've been hearing about Samsonov from our boy Ryan right here for
we've already been over this whole thing
for years now. For years. And if Seattle's coming and knocking on your door and you've got a big contract that you got to get out and you have the best prospect in your farm league right now, you know, that's do you sign the guy to even more money, or do you get the guy who's the best prospect in the world to play for you? And is he your guy going forward? I mean, Holtby's kind of in like a rock and a hard place right now. If it's for $5 million, I will go to that rock or hard place, sure. But, you know,
Seattle's a nice city, man.
And you know what? He already dresses like Bradley Cooper. He probably loves Starbucks. He'd fit right in.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be tough. Ideally, I would obviously love to see both of them stay. Nick Backstrom, if you are making me pick between the two of them, he is far harder to replace, in my opinion, than Brayden Holtby. And that's no disrespect to the Beast, who I love and will be eternally grateful for the save. But and just his play overall as a Capital. But yeah, if I had to pick one, it's obviously Nick, who is my favorite NHL player of all time. But ideally, I'd like to see both of them stay, in the sense that with Seattle, that's really the only thing that's causing this issue. Seattle, the advent of them joining the league is the only thing that's causing issue here, because if you don't have Seattle joining the league where you've got to protect one goaltender again, there's no discussion about this. Holtby's probably re-signed already, because you have no fear of losing anybody. What I think is going to have to happen is Brian McClellan's going to have to sit down and look himself in the mirror and say, how many more Stanley Cups do I think I can squeeze out of this core? And I think there's at least one. And so if you're in a position where you're sitting there where the Stanley Cup's never been harder to win, and you think over the next 3 to 4 year period, there's one more in there, and you don't know necessarily where that is, you need Holtby. Because as much as I love Samsonov, he's not ready to be that guy. He's still adjusting to the North American style of game, played very, very well down the stretch. But I want the guy that I've seen do it before. I want Holtby in net for that one more run. And so what I think might have to happen is the Capitals are probably going to have to make one of those Vegas-esque deals where they go, we're going to protect Holtby and sign him to a 3 or 4 year extension. And I would have zero problems if he wanted something like $7 million. I really wouldn't. I don't know if he can push his salary there. He's currently on 6-1. I think he's probably around the 6-5, 6-6 region, simply because his regular season numbers have dipped a little bit. But if he wanted $7 million to stay, I would give that to him, because the salary cap's going to go up again. And I would make a deal with Seattle, be it unfortunately a first round pick, to stay away from Samsonov, because you don't want to give Samsonov away because you know that he's the pillar of your future. But if you're Brian McClellan and you're sitting there going, I think I might have one more cup here, you need Braden Holtby for that. And you might have to make a deal that you don't necessarily want to make Seattle stay away from one of those guys. That's what I think.
Can't you hide the kid in the minors?
No, you can't, because unfortunately, with goaltenders, if he plays a certain amount of games in the AHL, which he will reach, I believe it's 50, which he will reach by the end of next season, you can't protect him. There goes my whole plan. Yeah. The goalie rules are different, unfortunately. So
Get that kid to the ECHL immediately.
South Carolina, enjoy. So here's my idea. And Brandon, you and I talked about this last week. I think if Holtby, let's say through halfway of next season, he keeps up this stellar level of play, yes, his cap hit's going to go up, you can move out the kid and bring in a potential, I think, a top nine forward with potential to move even further up in top six or even top line. I think Oshie's 32, Ovechkin's 33, Backstrom's 31, and your forward prospects are non-existent. So you need someone that's going to be playing with Vrana and likely Kuznetsov in the next couple of years, and Tom Wilson. So do you move the kid out and bring in someone that can be the next, maybe not Ovechkin, but the next Vrana, the next Kuznetsov, the next Tom Wilson without the suspensions?
That is something I've considered as well. I don't want to do it because I think he is such a sure thing. And so my advent there would be, if you're going to move that kid who is as blue chip a goalie prospect as I've seen in a very long time, you better make damn sure you're getting a 30 goal scorer back and somebody that's going to play for your team for at least 8-9 years, because that kid is unbelievably good. And obviously with the goalie market, it's so uncertain. That's why it's very rare now to see goalies get picked in the first round, like Samsonov was. It's such an inexact science predicting these guys, man. It's so hard to prorate goalies, but that kid has shown enough for people to know that he's going to be the real deal. And if you move him, you better make sure you get a real deal player back that can bank goals for you every year.
No, I mean, that's definitely true, but I feel like you also have goalies tend to last a bit longer in the NHL. And you have Holtby's only 29.
I agree.
30. He's got a lot of years left. So I almost wonder, do you take advantage of having this outstanding prospect to be able to go and find a team and you'd be like, hey, we'll do that, but we'll take your version of TJ Oshie. at a younger age.
That's exactly what I'd be asking for to start. And I'd probably want to pick back as well, because the kid is dynamite.
That's fair.
You've heard me talk about him a lot. I want a guy that's going to score 30 for me automatically.
I think I already solved our Andre Burakovsky problem. And if we just re-sign Carl Hagelin, I'm just looking at cap friendly. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That could probably work. I mean, think of a line of Hagelin, Eller, and Connolly.
It's a pretty damn good third line.
I mean, they did pretty well when Hagelin first showed up here. That was the line he was on.
It's not like they're holding anybody else back in the younger market, because, like I said, they don't have anybody younger that's necessarily making a push to be up there. And then maybe, you know, Stevenson can have a better season. You'll have Dowd, Stevenson, and Boyd. And then maybe that's where you then have Gersick just being like, hey, I want to play two guys, and give him an opportunity to get up here and get a shot. One other thing I thought with my predictions for this offseason is I would not be surprised to see the Caps trade one of their defensive prospects for a top nine forward.
Yeah, I think they kind of have to, because when you look at the guys they have in the system, they actually have a sneaky good defensive pipeline. And when you're looking at guys like Johansson and Juice, although I don't know that they're very interested in training a guy like that, and you look down at the prospects that they have there, I mean, that is an area where, you know, Connor Hobbs took another step forward this year. He's got a booming shot. I think Connor Hobbs is a guy that I would maybe compare to a Ryan Pulock type of player with the New York Islanders, who really took a big step forward under Barry Trotz. Same type of build. Big shot, really got a boost of confidence this year. If Hobbs is under the right type of defensive system that suits his game in the NHL, he could be a very useful player. I think that, yeah, you could potentially package up a couple of those guys to shore up your forward core. I mean, it's an asset that you do have, and what they do need is scorers. And so, yeah, you got to use what you have to get what you need.
So I that wouldn't surprise me at all. They do, like you said, they have a lot of defensive prospects. And maybe instead of acquiring a top nine forward, you trade one of your top defensive prospects for someone else's top offensive prospect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that they're going to have to try and explore, because what's very obvious is, be it Connolly or Burakovsky, whoever it is that's leaving, they're going to need to fill in a hole somewhere. And with the assets that they do have in their defensive pipeline, that is an area where you could package some stuff up to get somebody else's young player, because essentially then the risk is negated on both sides. We don't necessarily know what this guy is going to be over here in terms of forward. We don't necessarily know what these guys are defensively. So, you know, but you need a forward and I need a defenseman. So yeah, let's maybe make that work. That's definitely something that could happen.
And then one last prediction is that McClellan will pick up someone we've never heard of off waivers at some point right before the season starts and confuse everybody.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, all have heard of them, but yeah.
It was things will be like, what? Why? And then we'll all be confused. Any predictions from either one of you for this offseason?
I think we pretty much covered it, man. I think we've just done we've done it as much as we can. I mean, who knows? You're the one with the crystal ball, like I said.
Yeah, I just wanted to pad the show, make it a little longer. I got a couple bits of news regarding the Capitals. First, I saw this just a little while ago. Former Caps head coach and player Dale Hunter was named head coach of Team Canada at the 2020 IIHF World Junior Championship, which is going to be in the Czech Republic from December 26th until January 5th. So I'm sure Ovechkin is very happy for Dale Hunter regarding that appointment.
Yeah, I'm sure he's sending him a card as we speak.
I got to tell you, I was at the beach over the weekend, and I woke up early, 6 a.m., to see U.S. versus France Sunday morning, and Comcast decided to in January to move my bill up $40, but also took away the NHL network. So I was bummed I got it up at 6 a.m. for no reason, because then I couldn't watch the game. But hopefully, you know, by that World Junior time in December, I'll have Sling or something and can watch it there. Because Comcast decides, you know, hey, we own a big chunk of the NHL. We're not going to make that available to our customers. But go on.
No, thank you. We don't. Why would we want to do that? Other bit of news, the Caps announced that they raised more than $2.5 million for charities across the DMV, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes, very cool.
And yeah, so Brandon, should we get into the, should we get into the awards?
That's right. It's that time of year again. It is time for our annual What the Puckies. Everybody, welcome back to the show. It is time for the What the Puckies. That's where we give out our awards for the best, the worst, everything in between. So let's start off. Coach Dan, you can start it off this year. Why don't we go with, let's start off with a good one, the Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year. Coach Dan, who was your nominee? Who was your winner of Defensive Player of the Year?
All right, well, I didn't think too much about this one. I felt like this was kind of obvious. I feel like he's it once again.
Oh, so it's a
he. The top defensive player. So, well, you know what? Sorry, a little bit of spoilers there. I feel like he's earned it with the point totals, the consistency in his overall play. I'm giving my Defensive Player of the Year award to John Carlson.
Yay! Very nice choice. Very nice choice. I'm going to save us some time. Coach Dan, I am right there with you. John Carlson, once again, is my Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year. Also an all-star. You left that part out, so got to give it to him there. So, Ryan, who is your Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, I'm not going to hold you up either. I didn't think too long and hard about it. It's John Carlson, 70 points, 13 goals. He was fourth in defensive scoring. He had 5 assists in the playoffs. He was top 10 in both 5-on-5 ice time and shorthanded ice time. The Caps were actually significantly better shorthanded when he was on the ice. All the advanced analytics, the Corsi 4, the shots percentage 4, all of it was positive when John Carlson was on the ice, and that's the mark of a great defenseman for me.
All right, definitely. John Carlson, congratulations. It's not the Stanley Cup, but hey, it's right up there with it. Next up, let's go with the Jaromir Jagr biggest waste of cap space. Ryan, we're going to start off with you since Jagr's your boy.
I still don't enjoy that we call it this. He had pretty good numbers with the Caps. Like what do you want? Like,
that's not even the problem. The problem is that the cap situation, that wasn't a thing with Jagr. Yeah, well, so it doesn't even make sense that we call it this, but I still think it's funny because screw that guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for you guys because everybody hates him for some reason. He's a legend.
It not in a good way.
Yes, in a good way. Dude, he might be the greatest European hockey player of all time.
No, not in a good way in Washington. Not in general a good way. Fair. Not in a good way in Washington.
Whatever. Yeah, it did piss me off when he got traded to New York and had 120 points. Yeah, that pissed me off. However, I mean, to be fair to him, the Caps really sucked.
I agree. I think, as much as I hate to say it, I do think the Jagr thing could have worked if they'd gone with the right head coach. Cassidy was the worst freaking choice.
Well, and like, I mean, the roster really wasn't that good. Irrelevant.
Yeah, they built a terrible defensive roster off of guys that Cassidy knew.
Yeah.
He'd worked with Kwiatkowski. He'd worked with Jason Doig in the past. They were garbage.
Yeah. Jason Doig. I'm sure everybody had a really high hope for him. All right. My biggest waste of cap space is Dmitry Orlov. He sucked this year. I'm sorry. I thought that he was awful for what he gets paid. 5.1 million, 29 points. I mean, that's a solid-ish point total, but he could have had way more. He only scored 3 goals. He was just +3. He only had 33 hits, all for $5.1 million. It was a joke what he offered defensively. I mean, I'm going over his offensive numbers here. All in complete 180 respect to what John Carlson's numbers were in advanced analytics, they were completely the opposite with Dmitry Orlov on the ice with his partner Matt Niskanen, who also took a step back. He was awful this year, and he was a liability every single time he touched the ice pretty much, and that's why he's my biggest waste of cap space.
I have to agree with that. I mean, I've been saying it all along. I've been talking about Dmitry Orlov that way. But before we get there to my pick, Coach Dan, biggest waste of cap space, what do you got?
Well, I feel like this is not an. I'm not really going out on a limb here with terms of mine, but I'm giving my award to Andre Burakovsky. I think $3 million. He's not consistent enough. He had what I say before, 12 goals, 13 assists, 25 points in 76 games. It's not enough. Not for what he was earning. He, a player of his caliber, of his talent, should be producing more, not just in streaks, not for $3 million. Burakovsky's get my award for the biggest waste of cap space.
I mean, this is a little upsetting, the fact that we all agreed on who was the best defensive player, but we all three have different picks for biggest waste of cap space. Because
should the award be Jágr with a bag of money? Should that be what it is?
Looks like the Monopoly Maybe. Man. Jágr, the Monopoly Man with a bag of money over his shoulder. And a monocle. I've got to go with, unfortunately, Yevgeny Kuznetsov. For biggest waste of cap space, because I love Kuzi. I think he's definitely one of the best players on the ice normally, but this season, I don't know if he had a bunch of injuries, but he was non-existent. He was a ghost in the postseason. The regular season, I mean, he was all right, but there was a very big stretch of games where he was getting 0 points. I don't expect that from a guy who's making that amount of money and who's in the top six. So biggest waste of cap space, Yevgeny Kuznetsov, unfortunately. And I feel bad saying that. I really do.
It makes sense given what you're saying, because yeah, he should have been way, way better. But just in terms of the waste of money given, I feel like he probably earned more of his money than maybe Orlov or Burakovsky, because Orlov significantly played under what he gets paid. Kuzi still had 72 points. He was almost a point per game player. Yeah, he needs to be way, way, way better. But I was a little bit more forgiving of his performance than I was of, say, even a guy like Burakovsky, who 25 point, like he should have 50 points at least in his sleep. But I completely see where you're coming from when you think he makes more money than, I know the landscape was different, but he makes more money than Nathan MacKinnon, Mark Scheifele, Patrice Bergeron. He makes more money than all those guys, and he should be way more consistent.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing with me is that his consistency just wasn't there. And like you said, he had 72 points, and he missed a lot of games at the beginning because of a concussion. So he did sit out a bunch and was still able to get those points. So, I mean, really good job, you know, every once in a while. But, I mean, again, postseason, I'm factoring that in as well. He was not there. It was as if he wasn't playing at all. But, you know, hopefully Kuzi can come back even stronger next year. We'll see. So let's move on and let's look at the Skipjack prospect of the year. I'm going to start off with this one. I'm going to have to go with our boy Singin Thaler. I think he really showed a lot. He's still a prospect, but when we had an opening come up on defense for the Capitals organization, the kids stepped up, and the Caps went through a slump in January, and they weren't winning many games, but Singin Thaler, you could tell he was going out there. He was trying to prove something. I really liked Singin Thaler as our Skipjack prospect of the year. Let's go with Coach Dan. How about you? Skipjack prospect of the year.
Well, should be really easy, because I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's fair to say that he's still a prospect in a way. I think he stepped up and he was able to hold his own more or less during the regular season. I really think he stepped up in the playoffs. I think he's definitely going to get a shot in the National Hockey League next year with the Capitals. And if things don't, you know, he might get a top four role depending on how things go and how he's playing. So he is my Skipjack prospect of the year.
That makes a lot of sense, and I like those picks in that, you know, Singin Thaler, yeah, he's still a prospect. And what impressed me about him was his newfound commitment to physical fitness. When the Caps drafted him, he was upwards of 230 pounds, and he really slimmed down. He was playing at about 212 in the playoffs, and I can really respect that he is taking his opportunity seriously. Ross Mahoney and the scouting staff sat down with him last year and was like, listen, if you want to play in the NHL, you're going to have to shed some weight and get yourself into more of an NHL type of physique. He did that. He committed himself. He played well for Hershey, and I thought he did a very admirable job in very hard minutes getting thrown onto that top pair in the playoffs with John Carlson. In terms of myself, I'm not going to stray from the path. It's Ilya Samsonov again. He is the best prospect in the system. It's not even close. Nobody else in the Cap system even comes close to the potential that this kid has. Had some when you look at it, underwhelming numbers in terms of goalies, but it was his first year in North America getting used to the smaller ice surface, whereas in Russia, when he was putting up like 930 save percentages, the ice is so much wider and the shot selection is very different. He learned how to play the angles a little better. He still went 20-16-1 in his first year here in the AHL with an 898 save percentage, which ticked up in the last month to about 930. He had a very rough start, and then the last 10-12 games of the season, he was up around the 930 mark. He played really well going into the playoffs, a 270 goals against, three shutouts, and he went 2-3 in the playoffs. He took the starter's role from Vitek Vanacek, who is an AHL veteran in terms of the two of them. And I just think that this kid is the real, real deal. I think he's going to be an unbelievable NHL goalie, whether it's here in Washington or potentially maybe through trade with somebody else.
He's going to be really good in Columbus.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll tell you the first thing that came to mind when I was like, who's probably going to need a goalie?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Columbus, you know what, to be fair to them, they actually have some decent goalie prospects. Elvis Merzlikins is a really good goalie, and they've got a young kid who played at the World Juniors this year in Daniel Tarasov. Russia's turning into a goalie factory, and Tarasov is a really impressive young player. So I don't know how much they'll want to get another prospect, but I mean, you never know what the future holds. You know who's going to really need a goalie maybe in the next few years is Calgary.
That's a good point.
But yeah, you never know. But Samsonov, he's my guy. I just love the kid.
I mean, I like where your head's at. I mean, he definitely turned around the Hershey Bears season. I mean, how horrible were they at the beginning of their season? And
yeah.
He gets the net, and I mean, everything changes. They made it to the friggin' playoffs. No one thought that was going to happen in October. So
yeah,
go for him, and we'll see what happens next with him. Now let's bring it down. The Adam Oates biggest disappointment of the year. Coach Dan, I think it's a good idea that we start with biggest disappointment with you.
That's unnecessary. That was a cheap shot.
It was easy.
I know. It was just so
low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, a little bit. So my biggest disappointment of this past year is I felt like the going out in the first round is kind of an easy one. So I went with the way the coaching staff was put together. I felt like they delayed in hiring their assistant coaches and took so long that they had so many guys that were no longer available that they must have been taking the third or fourth choices in regards to the assistant coaches and the other people that they brought in. And I think that set this team back. If you look at the way that they regressed, I don't think it's all on Reardon. I think it was a result of a lot of the assistant coaches in terms of what they brought in. So my biggest disappointment is the way the coaching staff was put together.
All right, Ryan, how about you? The Adam Oates biggest disappointment of the year.
So I actually had the coaching staff literally just written down to start. Because I agree with Dan, and I just think I'm sorry that the job that Reed Cashman and Scott Arneil did in particular was awful. But in terms of maybe an individual player, it would be Kuznetsov, because this guy should be an 85 to 90 point player automatically. He should wake up and just put up 3 points. Especially in games against weaker opposition, this guy should be dominating scoring charts, and he's a guy that should be taking on that Backstrom role where he's getting 50, 55 assists and 30 odd goals. I was extremely disappointed with the way that he played, particularly down the stretch and in the playoffs. But I agree, the coaching staff was just a massive disappointment, especially in that first round loss.
I got to agree with you guys there. However, I'm going with the biggest disappointment of the year, DSP. Unfortunately, his play was not very good, which is why he got waived. And really, the fact that he got waived is a huge disappointment, because he was such a beast in the postseason last year. I mean, without him, the Caps probably aren't raising the Stanley Cup. But the way it happened to him as well, I mean, in his hometown, with his dad in the stands as they practiced, Yaskin gets taken off the ice, and then you think he's gone, and then DSP comes back or comes off the ice at that point, and then he's the one gone. I mean, maybe that also falls on the coaching staff, just the way that was handled. handled. I mean, that as well. He was supposed to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I know it's all a part of the bout of the business, and that's what you do as a hockey player or a sports athlete, and you know, in any sport, I should say. But it sucks that he took a lower cash rate to stay with the Caps, and that's how it turned out for him. Who knows what'll happen with him in the future, but DSP to go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows in that short of amount of time, that's a big disappointment for me.
Yeah, I won't argue it was disappointing to see where he ended up in terms of getting sent down, but I mean, like, it's hard because, you know, to win the Stanley Cup, you need a bunch of guys to step up in some small way. He ended up stepping up in a very pronounced way, especially in the final, scoring in the last three games. But the thing with DSP is, like, I don't know what people expected, because I get it. You know, you're on that high of scoring all those big goals in the playoffs, but the guy isn't like a goal scorer. He's not an offensive dynamo. He never has been at any point in his career. He's a role player. He's an energy guy. He's a glue guy, similar to the vein of a guy like Alex Chiasson. He's not that guy. Like, everybody, I've got a lot of friends up here who are New York Rangers fans, and way back when they won their last cup in 94, a guy named Stefan Matteau scored a massive goal against the New Jersey Devils in the conference finals. That was the year that Marc Messier made the guarantee. And Stefan Matteau was that guy, that fourth line grinder that kind of, you know, epitomized the hard work and that necessary little chip in play that you need from your depth guys. When you look at a guy like him, for instance, his career stats, like that year that they won with the New York Rangers, he only had 37 points that year. Like, he, you know, but he scored, in New York Rangers lore, one of the biggest goals in franchise history. But, you know, I don't think it's fair to turn around on a guy like DSP, who I agree was extremely disappointing. There's no two ways around it. He was out of shape for training camp. He was wildly out of shape, and that's disappointing. But I think that people got caught up in the hoopla of going, look what this guy did in the playoffs. Oh, he's awesome. Whatever. He is awesome. He's an awesome guy. People needed to maybe temper their expectations in terms of what he was going to do offensively. He played well down the stretch for Hershey. He really started to score a lot more, but I will agree with you in terms of what ended up happening to him roster-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going for. Just the way that it was handled, the way that he got sent down, and what he did for the team to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, like you said, people did think a lot about him, and then to see him kind of fall from grace that quickly, that was kind of disappointing to see. So next,
I agree.
All right, let's do the We're Not Going to Suck Surprise Award. Let's start that off, Ryan. Let's start off with you. Who is your or what event we're not going to be suck surprise?
It's actually a player for me, and it was the play of Nick Dowd. I was very surprised at how effective he ended up being in the role that the Caps placed him in. Remember, he was kind of a nothing pickup out of the Minnesota Wild franchise. People kind of thought, here's this guy. I don't know. I've never really heard of him type thing. He's not by any means a star player, but I was very pleasantly surprised with how well he was able to fill that fourth line gritty role. He had 22 points in pretty limited minutes. I mean, when you think about that, in that he scored 8 goals, he had 22 points. He only had 3 less points than Andre Burakovsky, who I'm sorry to rag on, but like,
no, go ahead.
No, that's very surprising. Nick Dowd made nothing this year. He was making next to nothing in terms of NHL salary, and the guy turns around in a limited role and scored 22 points. Like, that's pretty surprising to me anyway. And I thought that he fit in well to the team's system and culture. He's a good skater, and he does all those little things that are required that don't show up on the score sheet all the time that are required to win hockey games.
Coach Dan, how about you? We're not going to be suck surprise.
I like the Nick Dowd one. That's a good call. Earned himself a new contract. It's not an expensive contract. I think he's a good player for the team to hang on to. And if it doesn't work out in the future, it's just a one-year wonder. Okay. because his cap is not that hard. It's not going to hurt you if you send him down or move him on. My we're not going to be suck surprise this year. This one actually comes from my wife. It was her idea, and I liked it. It's Tom Wilson living up to his contract.
Okay. Yeah.
That is my – you know, everything we saw from Wilson, it was the expectations that he would one day, and you're just starting to think – you know, it's just it's not going to happen to what everyone thought he was going to be. He's going to be a bottom 6-4, probably third line guy. Got a big contract. You're like, oh, God, let's see what happens. And he got that big suspension. You're like, well, yep, that's going to be it. This is kind of the guy he is. And he turned himself around. He became this offensive minded guy who still plays physically, but not in a way that he was before he was getting himself in trouble. I think Wilson has stepped up his game. I see a lot of this on Facebook and Twitter, but he lives in the heads of the opponents because of the expectation is that he's going to do something big. So he doesn't really need to anymore. Yes, he's still going to be a physical guy and he's going to get his hits, but they're legal hits. He's gotten a lot smarter. He's gotten a lot better. And now he's stepping up offensively. He is my biggest surprise this year.
You know what? I'm right there with your coach. I'm also going to say Tom Wilson, and mostly it's because of what you just said. He got suspended. He was out for 16 games. I think it was supposed to be 20 games, and and then he came back, and it was a different player. He wasn't relying on just the big hits, just the fists. He was actually playing as a top line Tom. A top line Tom is what we like to call him. So I agree with you. If I had to go with like an event or something like that, I was actually thinking about including the Caps' first regular season game, Banner Night, because normally the Stanley Cup champions will lose like pathetically on that banner raising night. But the Caps actually came out, beat the Bruins, who are in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, and scored like what, 5 goals, and Lars Eller got into a fight. I mean, stuff you don't normally see.
Well, that's not true. Lars Eller got mugged, is
that's
what
true.
You mean to say. It was 7-0, and that puke stain Brad Marchand grabbed a hold of him as a joke. What a great player he is, but he's such a loser.
Yes, I have to agree with you there. So, I mean, the Caps came out, they opened up the season the way you'd want them to do it after raising that banner, and, I mean, gave you hope. Didn't really go anywhere in April, but still gave you some hope to begin the year off. So, that's it. Tom Wilson and the opening night game. So, now let's move on to the big award of the night. It's the Peter Bondra, MVP of the Washington Capitals. Coach Dan, let's start off with you, the Peter Bondra MVP of the night.
Oh, I get to go. All right. I get to start it off with the biggest one, big award. Let me make sure I don't pull, what was it, the Oscars that botched it and said the wrong thing?
Yeah. La La Land.
Yeah, that's my MVP. I am going to give mine to the man who seems like he has the best beard on this team, Braden Holtby.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Not you.
Oh, sorry. Jeez.
Mine's going to Braden Holtby. I know he struggled a bit this season, but I think without him, this team doesn't go anywhere near as far as they did in terms of winning the division again and being able to at least have a chance of getting to 7 games and have a chance of even winning that game. So my award for this year is going to Braden Holtby. I know his GAA 2.82 save percentage. Where is it? 0.911. 32 wins, 19 losses. I feel like this team struggled and hung him out to dry, but I feel like Holtby kept this team in a lot of games that they necessarily didn't have the right to be in. I'm giving my award to the goalie, Braden Holtby.
Well, I'm going to have to say, for my Peter Bondra MVP of the team, almost went to Tom Wilson, but I am also giving it to Braden Holtby. Like Coach Dan said, he was the saving grace behind this team for a plethora of games in the regular season, and it went to 7 games up against Carolina because of Braden Holtby, because of his fantastic play. He's one of the best goaltenders, not just for this team, in this league, maybe in history. I got to say that. Braden Holtby is a star. He deserves the money he gets in every one of his contracts. But
he's going to be getting.
Yes, and he's going to be making a lot more money in the very near future. But Braden Holtby is the reason why the Caps even got into the first round, I think. So I have to give my Peter Bondra MVP to Braden Holtby. That leaves Ryan. You're the last one. Are you going to stray from the pack? Peter Bondra MVP.
Dark forces.
Do you want to be one of the cool kids or not?
Yeah, peer pressure him into making a choice.
Who is your Peter Bondra MVP of the Washington Capitals?
Well, I always like to be a contrarian. that said, though, Braden Holtby, I love this man. He is, without question, the greatest goaltender by far in Washington Capitals history. He's one of the best goalies in this league. And when people, even still, I saw at times on Twitter this year, some of the fan base were ragging on him because of his numbers. I mean, did you even watch that team play in front of him some nights? During that 7-game losing streak in January, I was sick to my stomach for him because it was brutal, some of the hockey that they were playing in front of this guy. And you know what? Irrelevant of all of that, if Braden Holtby never wins another NHL game in his life for the Washington Capitals, he goes 0-50 next year. No one should ever chirp him in this fan base ever again, simply based off the back of game 2 of the Stanley Cup final, because that save is, in my lifetime, I cannot think of a save a goaltender made that was bigger than that one in a Stanley Cup final. I remember in 03 when J.S. Giguere won the Conn Smythe Trophy and the Ducks lost. He was so insane that year. Like Fleury's big save on Nick Lidstrom in 09 when the Penguins won, puke. That was big. That save literally turned the series on its head.
Yep.
And if he never does anything positive for the Capitals ever again, no one should ever chirp him from this fan base, because I remember saying to you guys heading into the playoffs last year, everybody relax, the guy's going to be fine, and he did it. So I completely understand your stance of giving him the Peter Bondra MVP award. However, for myself, I'm just going to be that lazy Caps fan. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be that guy, and I'm going to give it to Captain Obvious, which is the captain, Alexander Ovechkin. Yeah! I'm sorry, but like, I often sit back and go, I don't think that people like appreciate what they see every night in this guy. It's funny to me, like, how the narrative has changed so much around him this year after winning the cup, where he literally was playing so well all of his career, but people were going, they'll never win a Stanley Cup because he's not a good leader and blah, blah, blah. Now this year, like people like on the NHL network when they lost were just like, well, Alex Ovechkin did his part and he was great. What happened to the rest of the team? It was just like, man, you losers. Like, he's literally been that good the whole time. He actually has the most goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs since 2010. Fun little fact there. Logan Couture might catch him. But he's got 50 goals. That's insane. And you know what he did this year when everybody said, you know what, maybe this is finally the year. He's 33. Maybe he'll start to tail off. Oh, yeah, whatever. No big deal. I'll just score 52 goals, put up 89 points, and be disgusting again. It's unbelievable to me that people sometimes will go, oh, Alex Ovechkin's a one trick. All he does is score from the top of the faceoff circle. I'm like, dude, go on YouTube and just type in Alex Ovechkin top 10 and just lose yourself for a day, because he has so many highlight reel goals that are laughable when you watch how skilled this guy is. And the fact that he's 33 and came back after being drunk for a month and a half and came back and scored
only a month and a half.
Yeah, I could have been more. Unbelievable. The guy was literally oozing caviar and vodka in August, and he comes back and is just like, I snipe 52. I don't try. Like, it's ridiculous that this guy can just score 50 in his sleep. Do people understand how uncanny it is to score 50 in the NHL today? He has more 50-goal seasons than the rest of the league combined since he entered the league. Combined, the rest of the league. This is the best league in the world, and he has more 50 goal seasons than literally everyone else combined. That's it for me. That's why he's the MVP. The guy just completely takes over the team and puts up ridiculous numbers every year. He's the heartbeat of the franchise, dare I say the entire sports scene in DC.
That's fair.
You know what, with respect to the Redskins back in the...
No, you're fine not respecting them.
No, but you know what, with respect to those great teams that won Super Bowls and everything like that, and Sean Taylor and whoever else you want to bring up, There is nobody that's even on the same plane of existence as Alex Ovechkin in terms of DC sports and in the NHL in terms of goal scores, in my opinion. He is the Peter Bonder MVP.
I think at some point we're going to have to rename this like the Alex Obondra MVP or something.
Yeah, yeah. If we're doing this in 10 years' time, we're going to have to rename it. They might rename the they might rename the Rocket Richard Trophy after him.
I brought that up a couple, I think, last year. We were talking about that, whether or not Ovi would get his own award for like maybe like a Russian-born player or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, it was kind of poetic, the fact that Ovi's name went on the cup the same year that Rocket Richard's name came off of it, physically, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And what's funny about you saying that is a good friend of mine who's quite a bit older than me, him and his dad were both are both big Habs fans. And his dad obviously watched the Rocket. And he said to me a few years back, he was like, Ovi is the closest thing to the Rocket. He is the closest thing in terms of how physical he is and how high his skill level is. He's the closest thing. And I thought, Yeah, that's not bad. He's just the complete package. He's bar none the greatest Russian that's ever touched NHL ice or ice anywhere for that matter. And I just feel blessed really to have been able to watch this guy play hockey for my favorite team for 14 seasons.
It's wild. It's kind of unheard of to have a player play that long for one team, especially in today's sports, but Ovi, one of the best ever. Absolutely. So, Coach Dan, is that it for the show? Have we covered everything? I mean, this is one of our supersized shows.
Yeah, this is a long one. I was earlier in the day, I was like, oh, this will be a short show tonight. We'll have a little bit of Caps talk, and then we'll go to the thing. And then we're like, oh, we're going to bring Ryan on. And then it's like, oh, it's going to be a really long show.
I'm long-winded.
So,
no, that's all right. It's always a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get out of here, Ryan, let all the listeners know where they can listen to your show, where they can follow you on Twitter, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at @CKNX_Drury. CKNX, of course, being the news organization I work for. My show, MWO Sports. You can see the lovely advertising in the background here. M as in Matthew, MWO Sports. We are finally available on podcasting platforms. Originally, we were just on SoundCloud, but we were using our company SoundCloud. And so obviously, you know, if I can nerd out again a little bit, if you have any experience podcasting, you need an RSS feed to submit your podcast. And obviously if we used our corporate one, every single thing that our business ever posted would show up in our podcast feed, which is a problem because nobody wants to listen to radio commercials in a podcast feed. So we're now available on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher. We're on all that stuff. CastBox. You can find us now, MWO Sports, and listen to me rant about all things sports. We don't just cover hockey. We cover football, basketball, all of it. And it's a lot of fun. So you can follow the show at @MWO_sports. We're on Facebook. You can find us on SoundCloud and all the podcast apps.
You think you guys are going to cover the XFL in 2020?
I will be covering the XFL folding after 2 or 3 weeks. I'll definitely that. What a joke that is. The XFL, you know? Like, yeah, that's what we need. That's what we need in our lives. More garbage football to watch. Perfect. As if watching the Cleveland Browns for the last decade hasn't been painful enough. Let's bring back the XFL. And I'm arguing with my buddy who's a co-host on my show sometimes, Belzy. He's like, oh, no, it's going to be successful. I'm like, based on what? Who's going to be playing? It's going to be the war. It's going to be the NFL and CFL rejects. Like, what?
Who's and probably gonna arena football, too.
Yeah. Like, what are you, Johnny Manziel's going to play and fall over drunk on the field? Yeah, that's entertainment. Thank you.
I think it was the AAF that just started up a couple months ago, and after 2 weeks it folded.
Yeah, they made it through like 6 game weeks, and what's his name? Tom Dundon, the new Hurricanes owner, invested like $250 million into it. And then was just since he was the biggest individual investor, he basically was like, I'm pulling the plug on this thing, man. This is a joke.
Because I had that kind of money to just throw at something. Yeah, like, nope, never mind. Really, it didn't work.
I'll just write off $250 million. No big deal. I'll go to Ibiza next week and cry on my yacht. What a joke. No, like, come on, man. What did you think was going to happen? The way that football is structured, you can't just start this goofy league. What, you know, best of luck. That's all.
What the NFL, we're getting off on a weird tangent on a hockey podcast.
We do that,
what the NFL needs to do is take the guys that are on practice squads that aren't really playing every week and put them in a like an AHL league somewhere else in these like little minor league towns. I mean, the NFL is the only league in the world, I think, that doesn't have a minor league. So, I mean, it would make perfect sense to have a Hershey Bears equivalent to the NFL teams out there. I don't know why they don't do that. Or if you do want to start up the XFL, why the NFL isn't teaming up with Vince McMahon to make the XFL kind of like a feeder system. I think that's how you put that NHL brand on it. You sprinkle some NFL dust on top of it and people will go just be intrigued because you're like, oh, maybe I'll see these guys in the big leagues one day. You do the XFL or whatever else, you know they're not going anywhere.
That would be a better idea, but do you want to know why they won't partner with Vince McMahon and the XFL?
Why is that?
Because Vince McMahon is running the XFL.
That's true. That's very true.
That would be why. So, yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to continue the conversation about the XFL or the Capitals or anything else, you can follow me on Twitter at Brando Cash. Coach Dan, where can people follow you at?
You can find me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan, talking occasional things about the Washington Capitals. Not really much to talk about right now because not much is happening.
I disagree. We just went an hour and 52 minutes.
Yeah, but we're rambling for most of it, let's be honest. That's finding me on Twitter at WTP Coach. And I talk other things from time to time, Arsenal Football Club, Ryan, you shush, as well as the Bills and the stupid Skins, what other dumb things they're going to do coming up. And, the NBA draft just happened. Actually, the Pelicans got the number one pick. Did not see that coming.
Pierre, the Pelican.
Ah, it's very interesting. So they need it. That's true. Cause they're going to lose,
Anthony Davis.
Thank you. I was going to say something about his eyebrows, but then I was like, you know what? That's mean. I'm going to not go.
King Unibrow, yeah.
Yeah, I felt bad if I said something like that. So anyways, that's finding me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan. But if you've enjoyed our rambling over the last 14 hours or however long this podcast, I have to go make dinner after this goes, however long this show has been, go ahead and check us out at Facebook, or on Facebook, I should say, at facebook.com/whatthepuckpods, where you can find new shows when they're coming out, other things related to this show, as well as the Washington Capitals and the Hershey Bears and South Carolina Stingrays, all part of the Washington Capitals organization. That's facebook.com/whatthepuckpod. Brandon, if people have enjoyed this show and they've enjoyed your jokes at my expense, where else can they hear? Don't nod your head.
I mean, who
doesn't? Where else can they hear things that you have done?
You can go over to brandocash.com, get all the information you're ever going to need about What the Puck and all the other podcasts we do there. Like Coach Dan said, go over to our Facebook page. We are also on Twitter at What the Puck Pod. Like us, follow us, so when you know when a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know, because after today, the shows are going to kind of become a little sporadic, as we will be coming back as we have time. Because Coach Dan won't have a lot of that coming up, or if news breaks.
We'll come back when news breaks, basically.
Well, you know, you got the draft and some other things coming
up. We'll call it the draft.
Ooh, is someone getting dealt at the draft?
Well, you see, the draft is the thing where it seems to be where all the activity is now. The trade deadline has died a little bit in terms of big deals. It seems the draft is the place where a lot of activity goes down. So it might yield some very interesting things. And I think the Caps are going to get around that 25 draft slot. They're going to get a pretty good player.
They're going to pick a defenseman.
They better not. They should take a forward. And there are a few guys I have in mind on a wish list. But yeah, I hope they take a forward.
All right, well, Ryan, you have to come back before the draft happens. You can tell us about some of these players to look out for, because I don't know. There's a lot of people out there probably like me that have no idea who's out there and who the Caps might go after.
I can do that, man. Hey, I'm available to you guys anytime. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome, man. So make sure you go and follow us, like us on Facebook and Twitter, and then leave us an Apple Podcast review. We do this show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free. So please be a friend and let everybody know. So let people know on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, Snapchat, Vero, Twitch. Is anyone on Vero really anymore? I mean, that had like a week worth of life out there on the interwebs, but I don't know if you're on there. Tell no one that you listen to us.
Exactly.
It was cool for like a week, and then it died just instantly. They're like, we can't handle all these people that like our stuff. So, I think Zack Snyder kept using it, but again, why would anyone want to hang out with Zack Snyder? But anyway, so that is pretty much it for the show this week. Ryan, again, thank you for joining Coach Dan and I and everybody out there. Coach Dan, you know what? You got big stuff coming up in the next couple days. Best of luck.
Thank you.
And we're all rooting for you. So everybody, say it loud, say it proud. What's up, babes?
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.